My name is Tarek. Welcome to Thorin's YouTube channel.
All right, boys, where are we dropping? Where are we dropping? You ready to get your frag on? Here's the thing. If you wanted to drop in with a lobby full of Zoomers, wreck them all, get worldwide fame, become known as one of the best individual players in the world, because that's how people overrate a quite whack eye test, I'd recommend as your caffeine source, Gamersops. I love it. It's the one that I drink every day. I find it gives you the nice rush, it gives you the energy release, it's nice and smooth, doesn't have the hard crash, you just taper off gently, you only need one a day, you get a nice little gaming session in. Now, obviously use my code Thorin, THORIN, for 10% off at gamersups.gg, and that's my favourite flavour actually, the Guacamole Gamer Fart 9000. Obviously, it isn't really guacamole, it's actually strawberry lime, but it's delicious. Now, famed streamer, one of the biggest in the world, Shroud, recently came back to competitive play in esports for Sentinels in Valorant. So who is he, as the title of the series says? Well, what's funny is you might think you know, because you might know some things about Shroud's career, but I imagine you won't know it all. So before streaming, sort of, because he was actually, believe it or not, originally a streamer before he became an actual, like, full-salaried pro player in Counter-Strike. He was already a streamer. There was that whole thing where his original alias was Eclipse, and then later on, like, that name was taken, so he made his name Shroud, and then apparently he did Shroud because it was like a synonym of the word Eclipse, which is why, if you remember, in the early days, his Twitch actually was like underscore, like lowercase m, capital E, Eclipse. So I assume like Mike Eclipse or something, because his name's Mike, right? Isn't it Michael or something? So even back then, though, when he was actually at like the semi-pro level in Counter-Strike and a streamer, people even then said like, oh, he's got like a bit of talent, he's like skilled, but I hadn't heard of him. He wasn't like some worldwide streamer. He's more of an NACS streamer. Now, competitive CS begins for him in the spring, I think it was, or something like that, of 2014. This was a time when North America is nowhere near the top of CSGO. Actually, at this point in time, you had the Complexity guys of Nothing, Sean Gare, Senfacera, Hiko. They were one of the best. They'd been placing well in the majors, always in the playoffs. The iBuyPower guys were really skilled. It was like Skadoodle and Dazed, AZK, Swag, well, eventually Swag. Those guys, they were super skilled, stacked like. The problem they had was they were really good at NA lands. At the international lands, they were more middling. At the majors, they just never really do anything. And then obviously later that year, a bunch of them would get banned. So at this time, actually, the NA scene was still looking for a star player. I mean, I remember even around this time or next year or something, I actually did a video about this, and funnily enough, I think off the top of my head, I think actually I did pick Skadoodle and Shroud as the players who needed to step forward and become the superstars to match the get rights and the whatever. At this point in time, it'd actually be like Pasha, Invertus Pro. It would have been names like Guardian, Kenny S, Shox, Scream. These were the best players in the world. And quite frankly, they were all European. You had Hiko, who was clutch and a big game player, but he wasn't a monster like a Shox or a Get Right or something like that. So actually, NA needed something like that to be called forth. And actually, Shroud looked like maybe he could fit the mix. Because what happened was, he went and made his name at an ESEA NA LAN. It was the season 16. They used to call it like the global finals, the European teams coming. Obviously, they had like, you know, like Virtus Pro and Na'Vi and NIP, and these teams would come over. And he was playing in the Mana Juma team, which was sort of like a mixed team, as far as I remember, because it was like people who'd been pro in other games, like Irukandji and D-Born, were actually pros in like Complexity at the latter parts of 1.6, and now they're just like invite level players. And then a few other people who were known around the scene. So these are like known players. In fact, of the players, I think Shroud's the least known at the time, but he was a prospect coming through. Then what happened was, because Swag, all of a sudden, after the major kind of eats it, went over and joined iBuyPower, very shockingly, actually. I think this was the order of it. You then had this situation where Shroud was the person they actually chose to come into Complexity, even though they very quickly then rebranded to Cloud9. So what happened was the Complexity lineup at the time was Hiko, in my opinion, the best NA player, top 20 player in the world. You had Senfis, who was like a pretty good sort of support development and entry type guy. You had Sean Gares, who was the classic prototypical in-game leader, quite smart about the game, but a low fragger. And you had Nothing, who used to be a star and wasn't quite a superstar in 1.6, was very skilled. In this game, he was more in the middle. He was more like your X-Factor player, your third star, typically. But in this team, he's forced to become a star along with Hiko. I thought that was always what they lacked for. So actually bringing Shroud in, I thought, finished them in terms of firepower. He's a bit less experienced, but you've got some really experienced players and the rest of the core of the players there. It actually looked like a great pickup. And quite frankly, it hit the ground running. One of the first tournaments they played, I think it was the first LAN, was the major. It was ESL One Cologne, which, since this is 2014, that would be the third major, and this was the one famously won by NIP in close fashion. So when your first big LAN as a pro is the major, people are going to expect you to do badly. People expect the team to do badly. You're going to have to settle in, right? Actually, it went great. This was a team where I've always said, I actually thought, if I looked at the performance level and who they met in the tournament, I actually think this team was the third best team at the tournament, third or fourth. And it was between them and Dignitas as to who was the true third or fourth, in my opinion. I think they were better than the NIP team that won the tournament. NIP actually won thanks to a very close game and a super bullshit randomized third map cobblestone, which at the time people had barely ever played. I thought that was a ridiculous way to go out. This Cloud9 team had a real chance to win a major potentially. After that, they stayed in Europe and did a whole bunch of the LANs. Shroud himself was pretty decent, but the problem was, his big first performance of like popping off individually was at ESWC, and that was sadly when actually the team's form dropped off and they started to just become a team getting eliminated in the group stages. So in that one, they didn't get out of the groups famously. Then they went to the major DreamHack Winter. That was the one where they bombed out of the group. Now, they did have a hard group. In fact, by the way, interesting detail, Shroud even got to play against the guy we now consider the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Simple. He was playing in Hellraisers at the time and they played against each other in this group. I think it was maybe an Inferno game off the top of my head, which at the time was a map that was sort of good to shit for the Cloud9 guys. Unfortunately, they were sort of struggling with their map pull, and obviously people will know it wasn't long after this Hiko had a dispute with them, left the team. That was where the whole Hiko was right thing came, and then that was what separated out the Cloud9 and what would have been the Iber Power Super Team. Sort of, let's see, how would you say it? At the time, it was a divide. It very much wasn't like two top teams, both rivals and friends. Like they were harsh rivals. Like they didn't want in theory. That's why it was so shocking when Swag went over to that side as well. It was considered he sort of betrayed the team and the core and what had been happening internationally for this just aimers, for more status. Like people weren't a fan of it at the time, actually. After this, there were some tough lands for Shroud and the team for the next 4 to 5 months. Now, what's interesting about Shroud, a common theme of his career, is he would often smurf the qualifier for the major. And by the way, the qualifier was always on LAN. He actually was sick at the next Katowice one for 2015. The problem is, even though he was playing well and actually was coming into his own as an individual player now, then the lineup that they had the next year, though, bombed. Like, first of all, they did really badly at Katowice, people will remember. That was the one where there's famously that story where it was like Senfis later admitted that all of them were taking Adderall or whatever. I mean, technically, I don't know that he said all of them. I can't remember if he did say every single person that included Shroud as well, but like, they had the Adderall stuff going, they played terribly. They had Shazam there, who obviously people now know in Valorant is obviously like the leader of Sentinels and the top players, being successful. But actually, this was one of the periods that sort of started to tank his career a little bit. He had to revive it later with Optic because he did really badly at this LAN. In fact, famously, Dazed made a video stream where he analysed him and sort of showed some of the bad decisions he made. And so Shroud was clearly good. You've still got Sean Gares, who's legit. You've got some pieces here, but you've got to rebuild the squad. Like, the Shazam move just hasn't worked. They brought him in for, I think, denial because of an ESEA performance. It just didn't work initially. So what happens is, they managed to get in Skadoodle. It was a big-time signing, because at the time, Skadoodle and Hiko were supposed to be the package deal, and because the iBuy Power guys had been banned, they basically could go wherever they wanted, and they could sort of have called their shots, quite frankly. Like, they could have joined Team Liquid together. They could have forced CLG to take them both. They could have made a new squad and gotten paid. Could have done all that, but instead, because he got offered a 10k signing bonus, he just wanted to play. Skadoodle signed with Cloud9. So now you had Skadoodle and Shroud both in the same team. You got the skill back. This is the best AWPer in NA, one of the better AWPers in the world. Sure, he has to be sort of directed a bit by the IGL, but you got Sean Gares, exactly the IGL to do it. So then comes what I think is actually the career zenith of Shroud, which was, I think, the performance of his career came at the ESL, ESEA, Pro League Season 1 Finals. This is when you combined ESEA with the ESL Pro League. You put them in one big package. Now, obviously, got on to be the main way it's done. And Cloud9 finished runners-up, but they really could have won this match. Like, they're three of the maps are, like, super razor-close. Problem is, they were playing, at the time, the greatest team to ever play Counter-Strike, Fnatic 2015. And that team was just so impossibly clutch. They could just find a way back in. So even though Shroud had an incredible performance, he might have been the best player in the series. He had 100 kills over 40 four maps. So he averaged 25 kills a map. And he was plus 20 kill-death differential for the series. And he was playing against Olaf Meister, best player in the world. Flusher, legend at the majors. Crims, one of the most consistent players in the world. JW, nightmare wildcard. Pronax, god-tier mid-round caller. Like, this is no joke. This was a big boy performance. I remember when this one happened, I thought, right, Well, since Skanoodle's getting it together, he's having a great summer. Now Shroud's coming in. Dude, maybe these guys can win tournaments. This second might not be a fluke. I mean, they had to beat the Envious team, who was, some of them were actually major winners and one of the best teams in the world, to even get to this point a bunch of times. Then they had, obviously, Cloud9, as well as this result. They had two more second places at big international tournaments. They had ESWC. Now, he actually had a tough performance there. It wasn't so good, but they finished second anyway. Yes, all the top teams didn't go. Fnatic and TSL were missing, for example. Then you had the Face It Stage 2 finals, which were famously held at DreamHack Valencia. They finished second there. He did really well there, but they lost. I think that one was the one they lost to TSM in the final. They lost ESWC to Na'Vi in the final, and they'd lost Pro League to Fnatic in the final. So three times Cloud9's in position. They even have some close games at times and definitely close maps, but they can't ever get over the line. And unfortunately, it was just downhill from there. They had a top four at SEVO. Like, again, he smurfed the qualifier for ESL Cologne, but this time they didn't do very well. It just started to fade from them. The team started to go, and this is the problem, because from then on, it wasn't like that was like the beginning of something at a prospect. That was actually it. That summer run was it with the tank tops out. That was it. It was brilliant, but that was it. And the problem was, after that, Shroud himself became a very up-and-down player and looked at times lost. He had good fragging in the first years, but then once you get to 2016, once the spring's gone, he starts to fall off really hard. His fragging falls off. As a star, he falls off. Now, the team was able to re-up with different players. They brought in Automatic. They were able to actually have success. They won ESL Pro League Season 4 finals in Brazil over the SK Gaming team that was not only the world champions, the back-to-back major reigning champions, but a team everyone thought on home soil was going to win. So that was a big performance. They had a top four at that Star Ladder, the one that NIP won with Makaleli. They had a second at Northern Arena, which was some pretty good top tier one teams and top tier two teams. They had a second at DreamHack Bucharest behind Virtus Pro, who was in a renaissance. This is, by the way, when Stewie's come in the lineup, and Stewie's now even the IGL, and actually arguably the best player at this time. Shroud's more of just a side player. They were second at the IBAD Power Masters LAN. But then 2017 comes along, further drop off for Shroud. Actually, Cloud9 sort of get into a better position by the summer, but now he is very much just a supportive element. There's tons of discussion about how he's used. Does it, like, he doesn't have Sean Gares anymore. Now, Stewie's his IGL, but Stewie himself has just come off Pugs and is trying to be an entry in an IGL. So there was all this discussion of, like, has Shroud lost it? Like, does he still have it? Like, his mechanics on stream look awesome. Like, what's going on in the game? And basically, most people's conclusion was he needed Sean Gares to sort of move him around the map, set him up early, get him going. And as Sean Gares himself said in interviews, then he'd be in position. So without that, he did seem a bit lost. Then they had the last run, which is the last summer run. They were top four at ECS. That was pretty legit. Second to ESL Cologne. That was actually a big boy performance. They even beat Na'Vi and Simple to get there. But then they bombed out the major. They were finished 9th through 11th. They didn't make a deep run. He was cut slash replaced. I'm not actually sure what the order was on that one, which way around it was. I'd imagine it was probably like his contract was coming up or whatever. But then what happened was they brought in new players to Cloud9. They re-upped. Shroud just started to fade away and disappear. And the problem is, not only did Cloud9 very quickly become a top team again, they were like 4th or 5th in the world, they were making all these semis, but then they eventually, obviously, even though it was a little bit fluky, they managed to win the actual major at the beginning of 2018 without Shroud. He was just someone watching it at the time, and they won with it. And quite frankly, I don't think they win that major if Shroud stayed in the team. I don't think his game was at a point with that anymore where it was tenable. And Skanoodle was having issues fragging himself quite heavily over the same period. And I don't think you could have your two former stars be your two sort of bottom fraggers or the players who look lost in the game. They had to bring in people who could do it themselves, as it were. Tarik, Shroud, Rush, these were the players they brought in, competent players who can play their roles, and because Tarik actually star material, quite frankly, I thought he was the MVP of that major run. Now, obviously, after the pro career, he heavily focuses on streaming to Shroud, which, by the way, made perfect sense, and what a great move for his career. He became enormous. If people don't know, he not only was one of the biggest streamers in the world for the last, like, what, 5-6 years, but at one point in time, after Ninja had hit the absolute peak and been the number one streamer, at one point, Shroud overtook him. If people don't know, there was a period where, like, Shroud was the biggest guy, and at the time, he is still playing the sort of Call of Duty, Fortnite, Apex Legends, FPS games of the world. He's just playing general FPS. And in fact, there were loads of clips back there, like the famous clip where he drops, he lands on like a shotgun in PUBG or something. He's killing like all these people in the lobby. He basically became super famous among plebs and zoomers for just farming these lobbies of basically zoomers and just randoms and shitter players, as far as I can tell. Unfortunately, I do think that actually wrecked people's eye test. I think it made them think, wow, if he's just good here, imagine what he'd do against pros. It's like, that's not the way it works. It's the other way around. If you get a pro, even a bad, someone you think's a bad pro, like Fifflaren or Smiths or something, you put them in a matchmaking game, they'll dominate. They'll just shit all over everyone. Their game sense will look sick. Their aim will look sick. They'll frag out. They'll be really confident. Trout is like that, but times a thousand, because he's not even playing against tier one pros or average. He's playing against just absolute noobs. People who might have just got the game for Christmas and they just put it. Like, listen, I'm not quite sure about that, to be fair. You might not be able to get the Elo to be in his lobby. I'm not quite sure how those Battle Royale games work entirely. But yeah, he became huge, and that's why when that Mixer deal came, it wasn't just Ninja, it was Shroud as well. They were getting mad money, and obviously people know Famous, yet deal didn't even work out, so they kind of just got the cash anyway, sort of a golden handshake, even though they got to come back to Twitch eventually. I think he was one of the guys during the Apex Legends days where they would pay like the streamers. I think he was one of them where he came and did that for a week or so and was going at that game. And then obviously everyone bailed after the initial period, despite the fact it was getting those Twitch numbers, etc. So the interesting thing was, his fame did come largely from the streaming period, I would say. He already had like the King of Reddit thing from CSGO, but the problem is his individual level in competitive play had fell, and Cloud9 hadn't won big things for a while. So actually, it was sort of ruining his rep a little bit. This allowed him to get fully maxed out again. It's like, wow, it's just insane mechanical talent. Because let's be real, skill set wise, I do think Shroud had very good mechanical skill. I often used to say he's the one where it's almost like I wish I could take his skills and body and put someone else's brain in there. If I put like an aggressive player, rifler, brain into his body with his ear, he could have done work. He could have been one of the best players ever to come from NA. He could have been the best, quite frankly. I think it would be him, between him, back in the day, Hiko, like I say, it was more of a placeholder. It's really between him, Skadoodle, it would have been like Twists, Elige, and then maybe Naf comes up the back, I don't know. Like, he could have been in that category. Now, people like Elige and Twists, they've left him in the dust, mate. He's nowhere close to them and what they've accomplished in their careers. Now, I did think one of his problems, it's a problem if you want to be a star player, is his game sense. He didn't always seem like he had the best read in the pro game of where to be, what to do, where to find his kills. Now, that's an issue if you want to be a superstar or even a star in general. You're going to have some sort of agency yourself, because when people used to say, same as they did with Skadoodle, oh, I just need Sean Gares to work with him. And Mike, it's like, that's all well and good, but like, if you need someone else to pilot you, you're not actually a star player. You're just a turret being used by someone else to some degree, or a piece on a chessboard, which is great for Sean Gares. I don't know that's very good for Shroud, if you want to call him really good. So I think, quite frankly, when he had nothing, when he had Stewie, these guys didn't work as an IGL for him. I don't think they were the right player. They definitely didn't know this aspect of the game. I mean, they themselves come from, they're aggressive players themselves. They wouldn't necessarily know that you need that. So I do think he did get quite overrated in his CS career, although he was very good in 2015 summer at certain points early on and had a lot of potential. I do think he did end up very overrated, and obviously he has to be overrated because of the stream and stuff, because again, it's like watching Ronaldo go and play at the park with all the kids. Yeah, he's going to dominate them in the end. It doesn't mean that you can just put him back in Real Madrid and he'll win the Champions League. Who knows, that's not really how it works, right? So that then he obviously then came back now to come back to play, right? But it's not quite as simple as that, because obviously, as one of the biggest streamers, he was actually someone who was potentially bringing massive viewership to Valorant. Valorant's a game where the majority of the viewers of those enormous events come from core streams, apparently. And his was one of them. People would rather watch him or Tarik or these sorts of people do a core stream than the real event. I mean, I think that's because Riot is the most vanilla talent ever, chops and changes the lineups to keep them all uncertain, and they never created a cooler atmosphere. What they did is they took the League of Legends concept of how their shows are and just put it for a CS crowd. Like, I think that's the problem Valorant has as a game. It isn't the CS vibe. It isn't that type. So you're not going to attract those people. It's going to be a different entire audience, in my opinion. So he comes back, he was core streaming. Now there's this whole thing when he rejoined Sentinels. Because by the way, he played his first games, but I don't follow Valorant enough to know if he was good or bad. I think he was just a role player as far as I know. He played with the smokes or whatever. Now, I do think, understandably, everyone's excited to see, wow, he's really coming back. A lot of people thought it was a gimmick, WWE style wrestling move, like you bring in like a celebrity or a movie star guy who's promoting something. There was a bit of that, because the vibe was, since Sentinels has been going downhill all year, and it's years since they were the best team and one of the best teams in the world and the best NA team by far and have all the best players and tens of the best, it's so long since that, this was almost like a gimmick to A, bring some attention to them while they did the last chance qualifier and tried to get to champions, and also potentially to show like a power move. to say to Riot, like, hey, you better let us in this, like, partnership thing, this franchising type thing we're going to do here. Because, look, we can bring in the big names. We can bring attention to your game. That's what we can do if you bring us. I think that's a pretty clever, pretty shrewd idea, by the way. Bearing in mind, at this point, Sentinels themselves aren't a top team. They're nowhere close to the top two in NA. And actually, getting to the point where it's starting to get a bit touch and go as to whether you would want them in the franchise. And they're not for all the games, remember? So I do think he is still a major draw for obvious reasons. He's clearly a very skilled player as well. Now, I will say, to me, the fact he came back to competitive play is good in the sense that when someone's talented, if they have a competitive drive, I don't quite know where Shrouds is at. I'm not actually sure. In the early days, by the way, if what's things that's funny is, he's even the sort of guy who didn't even used to do interviews early on, because he was sort of like, what would we talk about? He's the kind of guy who's just a gamer, you know, he just likes to play. I don't get the sense he takes it necessarily as seriously. Or to him, it's more like, look, I happen to be good at the game and skilled, so yeah, if I get an offer, maybe I'll play pro. But I don't think he's that guy, like, dreaming of the championship, like, oh, he loses, so he's just, like, in his room in the dark. Oh, I've got to get better, I've got to improve. He's not some Kobe guy, as far as I can tell. And that's why the topic of Shroud does bring up, I think, a bigger topic in esports in general, but especially Western culture, which is, if you ever see on forums, all the teenagers and Zoomers are going to go, ah, who cares if he was a good competitive player? He is making millions and he is swagged out and can do anything he wants. Look, that's cool. He's got freedom in his life. He could do all sorts of things we can't. But I have to say, the reason to become a pro isn't for the money. It isn't for the freedom. You do it to be the best pro, to accomplish something. You're going for greatness. It's a craft. You're trying to get as good as you can at something and then beat the other best people in the world who are all trying really hard to be the best at that thing. That's almost like a samurai ethic. That's almost like a grail quest. There's something inherently, I'd say, quite masculine about that. It's the best of man. It's people aspiring to be greater than they are now, to transmute themselves from their base, just form of whatever, impure, to the most refined, perfect, vital force in the universe, quite frankly, that's made everything brilliant that's ever existed. Or you could quit all that. You could go stream and you could entertain a bunch of kids, beating people who are much worse than you for millions of dollars. Now, that might be fun. That's my point. What was your original goal? If his goal was just to have a cool life and be fun, and he's a really good player, and just a gamer at heart, then yeah, he's got the perfect career for him. But I don't really get that vibe of like, just retire and be a streamer. It's less stress. Nah, the stress is there for a good reason. You're trying to do something amazing. That's an indictment of Western culture. You worship money. That's your high. That's the top of your pyramid, your hierarchy of values. Money's way down for me. Money's a side thing. You need money at certain times, but certain other things you need more. A mission, a purpose, something to aspire to, something to work on, something to chase, something to run from. These are things you need in life, right? So I thought, as a little aside, I'd just bring that up because I do think the Shroud thing gets lost in the midst of the money and the fame and the huge profile and the fact that even if he comes back into a game, he hasn't been that a pro level player and everyone's watching, everyone's interested. He was, by the way, playing in the early Valorant scene with the cops and stuff. It's not like he's totally just a guy who's only been watching it or playing it in public mode. So yeah, I think Shroud was a very skilled player. He had a very unique career, one of the most unique ever. I do think it's somewhat curious he came back now. I don't really buy necessarily that he'll be there long term. If he does, I don't know if Sentinels will be a top team. And I think this was a little bit more of a PR stunt or just an appropriate moment where everyone could get their shine on and get into the franchising thing, isn't it? This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Oaks, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Pacey, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.